Well, it's nice to see you here this evening, and we give a warm welcome to those who are watching online. You're welcome and part of us this evening. So our brother Sebastian Pitcher will be leading our thoughts this evening, and his title is Choices and Decisions, and that's taken from Ruth chapter 1. All right, so our reading before we hand over to Seb is Ruth chapter 1.
Every choice, every option, each turning point has multiple possible outcomes. And in the moment when we make those decisions, we don't necessarily know what the eventual result will be or what other ancillary things will be affected by it. We may have some idea of what the likely effects of a decision may be, as we've gained knowledge from our general experience, our learning from others, our understanding of basic consequences and how the world works. But we aren't in a position to know the end from the beginning. But we must do the best that we can to make good choices from the information that we do have. As a bit of a trivial example, last night I had a completely different introduction to this talk, but I decided I didn't like it. I thought this one might work a bit better. It's possible I was wrong. I don't know what would have happened if I'd used the other introduction, which is about theoretical physics. If you're interested, you can talk to me afterwards, but it's not quite as interesting as it sounds. But we aren't just blindly groping around in the dark. We're not just flipping coins every time a turning point arises. We can make informed decisions, as I said before. And one of the best ways to make an informed decision is to know your destination. And another is to have a guide. You don't always know exactly where each turn in life will take you. But if you do know what general direction you want to be heading, you can do your best to head towards that goal. And if you find yourself going the wrong way, with these two things, you'll be able to make more sense and recognise that fact and correct it. And this makes a lot of sense when we apply it on a spiritual level, because God is the one who knows the end from the beginning. He knows the way through the paths of our life, so we should look to him to be our guide. Sometimes, in a particular situation, it may not be clear what decision God wants for us. But we should always ask his guidance through prayer and focus on the goal that he has set forth before us. Sometimes we will find dead ends. Sometimes we'll have to learn from our mistakes. But we do trust that if we follow our guide through all the twists and turns, he will bring us to our destination safely. And, as part of the guidance that God gives us in his word, he's left us records of others who have traversed this maze before us. And so we can, from their stories, not only see what the corners look like as they approach them, but also what resulted on the other side. And most importantly, we have Christ, who's opened the door for us at the end of the maze. He's the only way for us to access the destination through him. Well, good evening, brothers, sisters, and young people, and a very special welcome to people listening online. We do wish that you didn't have to be apart, but we are thankful that technology allows you to join us this evening. So, as you're probably aware, this evening we're considering the book of Ruth. And we don't have to cover everything tonight, thankfully, because we also have the exhort for Sunday week and the following Bible class a fortnight from now, which is a similar arrangement to what we had last year with Haggai. So last time, some of you may or may not remember, we did it in sections or segments. We broke down the book into chapters or parts of chapters and looked at a segment of it on different days. This time we're going to do things a little bit differently. We'll have some different sections as the readings, but overall, in each talk, we'll be considering the entirety of the book. But each time, we'll be considering a different layer and looking through the story through a different lens. And tonight, part of the overall series of this year, we're considering choices and decisions. Tonight is also the time when we're going to look at the background and the context of this story. And then we'll delve a little bit into the choices and decisions of various characters that we read of in the book and what we learn from these. Then, Sunday week, we'll consider some of the magnificent types and figures illustrated for us in this story. We'll see how we fit into this picture, and we'll follow that theme of redemption as we remember Christ. And then for our Bible class in a fortnight's time, we'll be looking at one of my personal favourite aspects of this book, which is how we see God's hand at work throughout it all. We'll consider some themes of providence and how God is with us through the ups and the downs of our lives. So I tell you this because if it seems that I've missed or skipped over something that actually fits into one of those themes or categories, I'm probably just saving it for one of our later talks when we will cover it. So now, the book of Ruth starts by telling us that this is during the time period of the judges. But just before we dive into that, I thought we might clarify a couple of things about choices and our considerations of these choices that other people have made in the past. We're not here tonight to cast judgment on these people based on their choices. I bring this up specifically because of the considerations we'll be making about some of the early choices in this book, such as choices to leave Israel. We're not here to decide, for example, if Elimelech should be counted as a faithful person, whether he will or will not be resurrected. That isn't our role. But God has given us this record of the decisions and the consequential outcomes for us to learn from. We may learn that certain decisions may lead to bad outcomes, and other decisions may lead to hope and salvation. But we must remember that mistakes can be forgiven, and each of us are trying to do our best for God. We do remember that we're not saved by our works or by our actions, but by the Spirit within us. And no one but God and Christ can see our heart to the Spirit that is in there. But it is demonstrated through our actions and through our choices. Or, as James puts it, we show our faith by our works. So, moving along now. As we mentioned, this is the time of the judges. This is a time when the faith of many Israelites was severely lacking, and this was demonstrated through their choices. If we look back just slightly from our reading tonight, at the end of Judges, just one verse prior to Ruth 1 verse 1, we read Judges 21 verse 25. In those days, there was no king in Israel. Every man did that which was right in his own eyes. So there was no king in Israel, not because they hadn't been provided with one, but because he was being ignored. They didn't have the faith to see him. God was to be their king, but they would choose rather to copy the nations around them, to follow their own gods, those gods that didn't come with quite as much responsibility, but allowed them to do whatever it was that they felt like. Everyone was just making the sorts of choices that suited themselves. And we know the result of all that. The time of the judges was not a pleasant time to be living in Israel. But this context would make it that much easier for people to justify bad choices and make it so much harder to continue making good ones. Because the attitude you would be surrounded by in this period was very negative. If you chose to serve God, you would have been one of only a few. You would not have been surrounded by an upright and encouraging ecclesia, with so many of those around you doing their own thing and going their own way. Which is, if you think about it, very much like our world today. Which is part of what makes this book so relevant to us. So before we jump into analysing some of these choices and some of these decisions that we read about in Ruth, we're going to have a little bit of a brainstorming session because, as you all know, I do like to keep my Bible classes a little bit interactive. I've decided to try something a little bit new and different tonight rather than using the old whiteboard. I'm going to use something that can be seen better online and doesn't mean that you have to put up with my terrible handwriting and my terrible spelling. So we're going to do things a little bit digitally. And this means those that are online can actually join in by going to the link that's on the screen or using text messaging. And I'll put that also on the WhatsApp for those for ease of access. But for those of you here in the room, we can do things just like we normally do. You can go to the link if you really want to, but we can just talk about it out loud as we always do. But instead of me having my back to you and writing things down on the whiteboard, I've got some helpers down here in the front row that will be typing down the ideas that you mention so that they'll all be on record for us.
Did I not put it up yet?
Oh. There we go. It's up there now. Sorry about that. So, I hope this makes sense to everyone. I'll just switch over so that we can see it, and then we'll see how that goes.
So, if we unlock it, and go.
Okay, here we go. Hopefully, things will start rolling in, and so the question here, this is just to get our brains warmed up a bit into gear. Think of any of the choices and the decisions we see people make in the Book of Ruth. I've put the obvious one up already as a bit of an example of the sort of thing I'm looking for, but give me good choices, bad choices, anything we can learn from, and it'll get recorded for us. Orpah returns to Moab. O-R-P-A-H.
The near kinsman not accepting Ruth as their wife.
Okay. So we've got Orpah returning to Moab, and we've got the near kinsman who he declines to redeem Moab, doesn't... redeem Ruth, sorry. So, yeah, good. It is working. The system works. So we've got, yeah, Orpah, and then, the near kinsman that refused to redeem Ruth.
Ruth's decision to glean in the field
with
Boaz?
Yeah, Ruth decided to go out and glean. This is good. These are all things that we are going to actually be considering tonight, so it's good that you're all on the same wavelength as I am. It's encouraging.
Naomi left.
Yep.
Elimelech left Israel to go to
Moab. Yeah, the one we've hinted at already. Elimelech chose to leave Israel.
Oh.
It's fine. Don't worry about spelling. It's still as good as I'd do. What were you saying, Tom?
The fact that Naomi chose to continue to request Boaz, like she knew she made a choice to work with Boaz.
Yeah. So Naomi chose to recommend Boaz to Ruth as the place to go and the person to talk to. That's good. So it looks like we've got some going up from the front row. We've got some people online as well that have been putting some in. That's good.
Boaz chose Ruth.
Boaz understood that she wasn't just a Moabite. He could see the character there. So, yeah, Boaz chose Ruth. That was it's another good one.
Boaz didn't go to Moab.
Yeah. That's actually a very good point. We think about Elimelech and his family going to Moab, but there's all the other Israelites in Bethlehem, like Boaz, who didn't go to Moab, who stayed where they were. That was a choice. There was a choice both ways.
Naomi
asked to be called a different name. She chose a different name for herself.
Ruth chose Naomi
Scott. Yeah, Ruth. That's a big one. Ruth chose to go with Naomi, to have her God, her people, her land, her dwelling place. But yeah, the big one is her God, isn't it?
Ruth also chose Boaz.
Yes, Ruth did chose Boaz. Naomi recommended it, and Ruth chose to take her up on that recommendation and continue with Boaz.
I don't know how to put this in a short, pithy sentence. You might be able to do a better job, Daddy, but it struck me as intriguing that Ruth decides to go into Boaz and be there. It's a decision she makes, it's a choice, but I don't know how to put that so simply.
Yeah. Like she chose to be covered by his garment.
Yeah.
What
Yeah. Ruth chose to be vulnerable. Yeah.
Ruth took Boaz's shoes
off. Yeah, took his, Ruth, she chose to take Boaz's shoes off. Yeah. There you go. I think we've got up there, or we did have up there, I think it scrolled down a bit, that the kinsman that chose not to redeem Ruth, I guess we've got Boaz choosing Ruth, but he also chose to redeem as well, right? Redeem the family, Naomi, and the land, as well as Ruth.
And one of Boaz's comments, that Ruth didn't choose the younger men that were obviously above.
Yes. Yeah. Ruth didn't choose the younger men. That's what Boaz said to her. You didn't choose to follow after young men.
I think I'd just like to say there's another new word that's come up there. It's covenant. It's similar to government.
Yes. It's good, yeah.
That'll be in the dictionary next year.
And one other one that I can think of that we are going to look at tonight is Boaz's choice to follow the principles of the law in this time of the judges. Okay, so I think that's pretty good. That's a good list. I can see that everyone's awake, everyone's listening in. We've got lots of choices and decisions here in this book of Ruth. There's probably more that we haven't mentioned, but that's a pretty good list. So we'll leave it there for now. We'll start delving into a few of them, and we'll come back. Yeah, Boaz chose to follow the law. Good. So we'll come back and use this again right at the end. But for now, let's switch back over to the PowerPoint. So, as I mentioned earlier, we are going to be looking at the choice of Elimelech to move his family to Moab. And as I did say, we're not here to cast judgment, but to look at what God's put on record for us about this decision so that we can learn from it. So firstly, what are we told? We're told that there was a famine in the land. And we understand that in such a situation, you want to take care of your family because a famine can be quite a trial. And we have records from Genesis of famines causing trouble for even people like Abraham and Isaac. Abraham went down to Egypt because of the famine in the land. And that resulted in all sorts of trouble for Abraham and his family. And so we can see that famine is a very severe trial that is very difficult to bear and can cause a lot of problems. And in our day and age, in this privileged country that we live in, it can be hard for us to comprehend what a famine would be like, because we're not dependent on living off the land as they were. For us, there's always some food available on the supermarket shelves. But Elimelech would have been in a very different situation. He would have seen the dwindling food and the increasing difficulty to feed his family, so he decided that something had to be done. Problem is, what did he decide to do about it? Well, he decided to leave the land of Israel, and the land of Israel was their promised inheritance, the land they were told was to be flowing with milk and honey. This was their land given them by God to dwell in, and they were supposed to value that inheritance and that promise. This land was linked to the promises to Abraham. And so, if we consider what I was saying in my introduction about working towards your goal with each decision you make, what's Elimelech's goal? What's his destination he's working towards if this is his choice to leave Israel? We can't be completely sure, but it doesn't seem like this move would serve a goal of being in Israel. So was he using God as his guide to make this decision? No, we're not trying to judge his motives, but we need to admonish ourselves and understand the warnings and the lessons that are left for us in this record. Because God had warned Israel that if they disobeyed him, as they had been doing all the time of the judges, he would be punishing them with punishments such as famine. And I assume we're all fairly familiar with the cycle of the judges, how the people sinned against God, and so God handed them over to suffering. Then in their suffering, they began to seek God, at which point he sent them salvation, until they turned back to sin again, and the cycle continued. And so these hardships were meant to cause the people to seek God and to call out to him. But Moab really isn't the place to go if you're seeking God. Moab in the Bible is associated with fornication, from the conception of Moab by Lot's firstborn daughter to the daughters of Moab that infiltrated the camp of Israel in the wilderness, turning the men away until Phinehas put a stop to it with his spear. The Moabites didn't serve Yahweh. They served the abomination called Chemosh. And this is the ungodly environment that Elimelech and his family found himself in. Elimelech did say they were just going to sojourn, but it does seem they ended up settling in for some time. Yeah, as my version says in verse 2, they entered the region of Moab and they settled there. And Elimelech died in the land of Moab. He never returned from this so-called sojourn. And his sons decided to settle down and have families of their own there. They were marrying Moabite women. And we know they were there for at least 10 years, because it says there that, in verse 4, they continued there about 10 years, but we're not told how long it was before Elimelech died, so it may have been more than 10 years. And so that's starting to look like not quite so much of just a sojourn, but a settling down. We know the end result of this was not good for Elimelech's family. Only one of the four members that left Israel ended up returning. The other three all died in the land of Moab. And by the time she returned, Naomi was stricken. She had lost her family, and she no longer wanted to be called Pleasantness, as her name Naomi means, but she wanted to be called Bitterness, Mara. And so we can see that God is clearly showing us that this is not the sort of decision we should emulate. Rather, he wants us to learn a lesson from this, not to abandon our inheritance when things get tough, especially not to turn to the world with all its idolatry and fornication. It seems obvious enough that we need not state it, but we must remember that Elimelech was facing famine and possible starvation when he made this decision. So how well do we hold up God's ideals when we're put under that sort of pressure? Would we have the clarity of mind to put eternal salvation of our family ahead of their current lives and well-being? And how easy it is that we can rationalize things, saying, oh, we're only sojourning, it's only for a short time, just a little thing. Then we find ourselves up to our necks when we at first assured ourselves that we were just dipping in a toe. When the difficulties of this life arise, do we look to the things of this life for the answers, for the solutions? Or do we rely on God and make sure we're doing things His way? This past year hasn't been easy for us, but we're told that the last days aren't going to be easy. If anything, we're told that they're going to get harder until the day of Christ's return. So we need to make sure we learn this lesson now, to make sure that our faith and our resolve is strong, so that we can rely on God and not turn to the world, even when others around us may be solving their problems in their own ways. In the time of the judges, people did what was right in their own eyes. And as we mentioned, that's very characteristic of our world today. Today, people are entitled to their own morality. And the world around us seems to offer us so much for this life. But we know that it leads only to death. So we must hold on to our inheritance. And if we do find ourselves astray, we need to make the choice, like Naomi did, to return to God's people and not just stay where we are in the world. But now we get to consider something a little bit more positive. The other choice that I really want to look at from this first chapter is the one that I started off our brainstorming with, the decision of Ruth to leave Moab behind and to go with Naomi to the land of Israel. And we can think for a minute about how hard this decision would have been for Ruth. She's leaving behind friends, family, stability, culture. Basically, her whole life is being left behind so that she can go to a foreign country. And why is it that she did that? Well, it's evident from what she said to Naomi, which we have here on the slide behind me, which I'm sure many of you have memorized in Sunday school. It was really because of God. Thy God shall be my God. She wanted part in that inheritance, in those promises to Israel. She wanted to be part of those people of God. And remember, there are two people that are given this decision in this chapter, as we mentioned earlier. Both were initially thinking of returning with Naomi. But once she realized the reality of what it meant, Orpah went back to her own people. And Naomi at this time was really not doing a very good job of preaching. She wasn't encouraging Ruth to go back. We see in verse 11 of chapter 1, she says, you know, there's no reason for you to return with me. Was there no reason? There absolutely was a reason, a very big reason. And that's what Ruth explains to Naomi. This is the reason to go back with you to Judah. Because your people are the people of God. And we see at the end of this chapter that Naomi's not in a very good headspace at this time. So it's certain that it's not things that Naomi is saying that's convincing Ruth to come with her. It's Ruth's own conviction that's coming with her despite Naomi's protests. And so God has called Ruth, possibly through the words and example of Naomi previous to this. Ruth must have had some understanding of the God of Israel, otherwise she wouldn't have said the things that she said, and she wouldn't have gone with Naomi. And we never know who it is that God may call. And so we must never turn people away from God, but encourage them to follow and share with them the joys of fellowship in Christ. The two sisters-in-law that parted here on the road reminds me of Christ's words in the Sermon on the Mount, Matthew chapter 7, verses 13 to 14. Enter ye in at the strait gate, for wide is the gate and broad is the way that leadeth to destruction, and many there be which go in thereat. But strait is the gate and narrow is the way which leadeth unto life, and few there be that find it. Orpah took the obvious and easy road back to her comfortable life in Moab. But Ruth had found that narrow path. She'd seen where it is that it's headed, the final destination, and she decided that any hardships and difficulties along that way would be well worth it. So she took that opportunity with both hands and wouldn't let it go. So the question we have to ask ourselves is, do we have that sort of conviction when it comes to following God? Are we prepared to give up the things that may be stable and easy, comfortable, to follow in the way that brings us closer to God? We here are very fortunate to have family and friends and a life in the truth. We know that there are many others who give up these things for the sake of Christ. And so what is it that we are willing to give up for our hope? What could we do without to be part of the promises to Israel? If Ruth gave up everything. It just gives us something to think about, doesn't it? Well, in Ruth chapter 2, we see a little more of Ruth's wonderful character. And as we mentioned before, she decides that she wants to go out and glean. So again, remember the context. This is the time of the judges, a very dangerous time for a young woman to be going out on her own, especially a Moabite woman. People would be even less likely to look out for her or even care if anything happened to her. Her only family was Naomi, and Naomi was still at home, possibly still in mourning. But Ruth wasn't one to sit idle. She and Naomi had nothing. But she wasn't going to stay at home and complain about her situation. She would go out and do her best to provide for them both. And if you glance into chapter 2, you will see that she's a hard worker. Here she's when she's providing for others. She's showing attitudes of initiative, diligence, generosity and care. There's another decision to note in this chapter. It's not a decision that's been explicitly outlined in the chapter, but inferred by the context. And that's the decision that we mentioned of Boaz to follow the law and provide for the gleaners. So here we have the passage of the law where they were told to leave the corners of the field and not to go back for anything that was missed, but to leave those things for the poor and for the strangers, for people such as Ruth. But there was never any prescription in the law of how big a corner is. Some landowners would read this law and try and get in as close to the corners as they could, maybe a bit like that. You can hardly even see that those corners are there. Maybe they've only left a few stalks and they've been very meticulous not to drop or miss anything as they went through and harvested. At this time, we know many would have been ignoring the law altogether. Because when people are doing what's right in their own eyes, why would they leave anything for others, even the corners? But here in this chapter, we see the spirit of Boaz. He has gleaners in his field, and he doesn't chase them off, as I'm sure some others would have. He probably had the biggest corners on the block. Maybe he just harvested a big circle like that there and left all the rest. We don't know. But it is recorded for us in this chapter that he instructed the workers to drop extra on purpose. And this is the generosity and the character of Boaz. God told him to leave corners, so, oh boy, he was going to leave some corners. He knew the spirit of the law. He wasn't just doing it because he was told, but he was doing it because he was caring for those that needed it. And so this choice that he made to provide for others would not have been normal at this time of the judges. And so we also must be generous with the blessings that we find ourselves with. We must remember that they are gifts from God. And even if we find ourselves lacking, as Ruth did, rather than just complaining to God, we have to get out and be active so that God can work in our life rather than just having us sitting around. And like Ruth, we should apply ourselves diligently to whatever tasks we may find ourselves to do, doing them to the glory of God. And when we have opportunity to do something to help others, we should make the most of it, put others' needs above our own, trusting that God will provide. The final decision that I want to consider together tonight is the decision of redemption. In Ruth chapter 3, Ruth does ask Boaz to redeem her, and we will talk more about all of this on Sunday week. But for now, I do want to briefly consider the decision to redeem Ruth. Boaz decided to redeem her, but only if the nearer kinsman, who had the right to redeem, chose not to. And so there are two things that I really want to pick up on from Boaz's decision in chapter 3, and I want to highlight for you. Firstly, he was determined to do things the correct way. You may have heard the phrase, the end justifies the means, or a multitude of other phrases that essentially mean it's okay to bend the rules as long as you're doing it for a good reason. Boaz did not subscribe to any such philosophy. He was doing the right thing, and he'd go about it the correct and proper way. He probably expected that he already knew what the other kinsman would say or do, but he wasn't going to go behind his back. He was going to make sure to find him, bring it up with him, and give him the opportunity. And the second thing I want to highlight is that when Boaz decides to do something, he doesn't wait around. Once a decision is made, it's time to act upon it. Not wait around for the decision to get a little bit stale first, and then we'll pull it out of its box and address it next week. He had confidence in his decisions, and that meant once he'd made up his mind, he'd get straight to working on sorting it out. He was not a procrastinator, especially when things were important. So I don't know about the rest of you, but that's certainly a lesson that I need to learn from Boaz, not to procrastinate. And so Boaz, the very same day, as Naomi said that he would, goes and finds the other kinsman, and that's recorded in chapter 4, and sits him down in the proper place with the proper people to sort this all out properly. Now the other kinsman also has a choice here, as we mentioned before. And at first, when the redemption all sounds like upside, keeping the family land, he's all in for that. But when Boaz explains that there's more to it, well, that's when the kinsman decides not to go through with it and leaves it to Boaz. Again, we're not going to cast any sort of judgment on this kinsman. We don't know if he was hesitant to marry a Moabitess, or maybe he already had a wife and family. We don't fully know his reasons, but he doesn't redeem Ruth, and he allows Boaz to go ahead and claim that right. And so doing things the correct way did pay off for Boaz. And Boaz could see past Ruth's ethnicity, and he could see who she really was. His judgment wasn't clouded by bias. He wasn't a respecter of persons, but he cared for others and would uphold the importance of the family inheritance. And so tonight, we've barely scratched the surface of this wonderful book that we have to consider together. But I felt it was important to cover this topic first this evening, as it ties in so strongly with our themes for the year, and it gives us a really good overview and a background to the story of this book. And I'm really looking forward to sharing some of these deeper layers that we'll be getting into on Sunday week and our next class in a fortnight's time. But before we conclude this evening, we've still got a little time left, so let's see if we can get our digital whiteboard up and working again and make sure we've got plenty of take-home decision for our discussion tonight.
Okay.
So what we're going to do, I've been trying to bring out some of these practical lessons. So if there's any that have stood out for you, anything that I haven't mentioned, anything like that, you know, please let me know. We'll put some things up. And if we can make it practical and specific, things that we can take home from tonight and be like, this is what I'm going to do because of the things I've learnt from Boaz and Ruth and the other characters in this book, we'd have, you know, a good note to end on and something, you know, practical to apply in our lives, because that's really what Bible study is all about.
Action versus being reactive. So Boaz was active, he didn't procrastinate.
Proactive versus reactive. Boaz was a very proactive person. He made his decision, he went out and did it and didn't procrastinate.
Naomi's, even though she was in the future stage at that point, must be an amazing example to preach the truth to somebody in a foreign land, basically, her example.
Yes, and Naomi was a great example. Even if she was in a bit of a bitter state and not really in the headspace she wanted to be in, she was still a really good example that Ruth could latch onto, even in a foreign country, even with everything going wrong. She was a beacon of light, and we can try and be an example to those around us, whatever's going on in our lives.
Not to prejudge people. You know, that maybe come from another country or a different culture, but because we don't know their heart.
Yeah.
God does.
Yeah, don't prejudge people. Don't have prejudice or respect of persons. You know, other country, whatever it is, we don't know their heart. God knows who he's called, so we must treat people fairly.
I like that little diagram, Daddy, of being trimmed around the edges, so just my little rough bit of mass. I like that idea of Boaz harvesting in a circle, which meant about a quarter of his entire farm was given to widows, marvellous, the people that couldn't fend for themselves. It was almost like an individual attempt at social justice.
Yeah.
Providing a social aid.
Yeah.
But I thought that was really nice.
Yeah, Boaz, as you're saying, Boaz was generous with about maybe up to a quarter of his field, right? giving to those who are in need, looking after those that needed looking after. You know, because in the law they were told, you know, 1/10 to the temple, but they weren't told how much to leave for the poor. That was up to their own discretion. And so, yeah, that's definitely a lesson from Boaz is to, with the, because remember, they're God's gifts to us. That's what God kept telling the people in the law. I'm giving you this land. You were slaves. I brought you out. So you need to remember others because I've remembered you. And so, yeah, we, you know, we do have social welfare systems and things in this country which we're very gracious to have. But when we see people in need, do we have hearts like Boaz? Do we have big corners?
And that's true religion from James, looking after orphans and widows in their affliction.
Yeah, true religion is this, to look after the fathers and widows in their affliction, fatherless and widows in their affliction, and to keep unspotted from the world. And that's certainly Boaz, isn't it?
Be strong in your faith, even when you're in the wrong place.
Mm.
Naomi wasn't, you know, but she actually brought an interested friend or family member, and that's amazing. She wasn't surrounded with the comforts of people.
Mm. That's an interested friend that reminded her.
Yeah. So be strong in your faith regardless of your circumstances and the situation you find yourself in. Because, yeah, Naomi was not in a good situation. He was in a foreign country, but she was an example and it ended up being an interested friend that showed her the light. Right? So, you know, we never know what people God is bringing into our lives for what reason. And, you know, if we show the light to them, they can then show the light back to us.
This is going off on a total tangent.
That's right.
But the aerial view of Boaz's field, with the corners chopped off in the circle, and the middle looks like the temple.
Oh, yeah. But, yeah, maybe Boaz was harvesting his field to look a bit like the temple, yeah, the circle in the middle. Yeah.
I was thinking about James's comment about how Boaz was so generous, in line with your comment about that we've got social systems. So the thing that our social provisions doesn't give that we'll have is our time for someone else. And I was just thinking, how would it look if I spent 25% of my free time to
have,
like, just listening to others?
That'd
be a big difference.
Our social system in this country gives money and food to those in need, but what it doesn't really give that we can give is time. And so what would it look like if we were as generous with our time as Boaz was with his field to those that are in need and those that are disadvantaged?
It also shows that God is looking for people for his name, not just Israel for his name, because she would be a
noble wife.
Lots of Gentiles were accepted.
Yeah.
They believed in the one true God.
God is calling all sorts of people for his name and to be part of his family.
Maybe the big circle of Israel.
Well, yeah, like that's exactly what it says in the law is, you know, the edges are left for the strangers and the foreigners. Like the law specifically calls out like Gentiles and things that can be included in this. You know, Israel is supposed to be the promised land, but if they don't have a part in this inheritance already, they need to be included and cared for. And so that's the same today. God's calling all sorts of people. We don't know who it is that God has in his plan to bring. And so, yeah, that's a very good point.
Because some people say, oh, you know, they wouldn't have heard it and they wouldn't have listened. But, you know, Rahab was the only one, so she obviously knew and got to know them.
Yeah, people can hear it in surprising ways. Like, yeah, Rahab, how did she know all these things that Moses had said, right? And even today, it's like people have access to so much information that you never know what someone may have heard and what someone may already know.
Well, the children of Israel took people with them too, who wanted to go with the God of Israel. So it's a powerful message that there are people who need to say.
Yeah, all throughout Israel's history, there was the mixed multitude that was brought in. There was the Kenites and the what's the ones that were the drawers of wood and the hewers of water,
the Gibeonites.
Yeah, all those other people that were all through from the beginning of Israel's history, there was people being brought in to be part of this hope.
So,
Boaz
was a good man.
Sorry, Bastian, I keep coming back to that visual of the field because it's so powerful. I think another way you could look at it is that circle in the middle is like us and our family and our close friends. So try and visualise who is it around the fringes that you just...
So, yeah, it's...
making a little difference to around the fringes.
Yeah. So in the field of our life, we've got the centre circle, which is for us and our close friends and our ecclesia and our family, you know, but how much time and effort do we dedicate to that, and how much do we leave for those that are maybe hanging on around the edges that, you know, are there, they're looking, they're not, they haven't wandered off, but, you know, they're just only around the edges, and how much time and effort and energy do we give to them? That's a very good point. Seems like a lot of you liked that visual that I made in about like 2 minutes in PowerPoint.
I wonder too whether we could consider Marlon taking his family away and I'll just do someone that has to go interstate or even overseas for work or for study. So the risks there are great if those activities are done without... So the lesson for us is, well, if we've got friends in that situation or family, then there's a much greater responsibility to stay in touch with them.
Yeah.
Because they haven't got the access to fellowship, for example.
Yeah, it's a good point. So, like, Elimelech felt we had to move to Moab. Sometimes there are legitimate reasons why we have to move interstate or overseas or things like that. And so when that does happen, it's very important that the rest of us keep in contact with those people and, you know, keep encouraging them, making sure they're okay. And you know, remember, all of us are strangers and sojourners in this world, this dark world around us. We're all waiting for the kingdom. So all of us need to watch out not to be too involved in the world around us. You know, as I said, be careful not to dip your toes in, otherwise you might find yourself in up to your neck. But really what James is pointing out is that we've got this support network of our friends and our family and our ecclesia. And so when we do find ourselves having to move, or we know other people that have to move away and can't meet with us every week, you know, we still need to make sure we think of them, give them time, talk to them, and, you know, because they are in a more vulnerable position. You know, we're all in a vulnerable position in this world, but if they're not getting that constant contact in our ecclesia, we need to make sure they're okay and not getting overwhelmed by the world around them.
I really like the first point about don't keep your eyes on the end goal.
Yeah. Yeah, keep your final destination, your goal in mind, and let God be your guide as we traverse the maze of life, as I started with. You know, we can't necessarily see around the next corner, but God's given us stuff to learn from, given us principles to guide, and most importantly, he's given us that vision of that end goal to focus on. And so we must have that same conviction of Ruth, of we want that inheritance, we want that kingdom, we want that end goal, and we're willing to give up everything to go through that maze and find our way to that end. And it's not our own way, we're going to find God's way there. And God's going to give us the help there. But yeah, if we lose sight of where we're headed, that's when you can really get lost. Whereas if you know where you're headed, then you'll know when you're heading in the wrong direction, even if you didn't recognize the turn that started taking you there. Well, speaking of taking you there, we've come right up to the end of our time, so we're going to have to leave our brainstorming there. So thanks, everyone, for your involvement and participation. It was a... really good that we could all get so much out of it together. And, you know, it's not just a story in the Bible, right? There's all these choices and decisions which can really help us when we're making choices and decisions in our daily life. And I look forward to looking at the rest of Ruth with you over the next couple of weeks.